welcome to the Guitar Nerd's Home Recording Guide, a new four-part series all about how to record at home, the equipment you'll need to transform your gigging or practice rig into something that allows you to create great music at home, and some hints and tips on how to get started or how to improve, and if you're already well versed in home recording, hopefully a few tidbits to really hone your skills. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by professional freelance producer, YouTuber, and all-around knowledgeable fella, Mark Roberts. Hello, Mark, and welcome to the show.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yes, I am all good. Thank you very much for joining me on the first episode of, what do I call this? The Home Recording Guide. Yes, but I've wanted to do a series on on recording bits and bobs for ages, because the other three guys that we do the main Guitar Nerds podcast with, I keep trying to put things into the main podcast where I'm like, let's talk about these plugins, let's talk about this interface, and it's not something that any of them do. None of them record at home at all, or ever have. Yeah. None of them even know how to open a door, so it would make for a very one-sided conversation. So I'm very, very excited to actually be talking to someone who obviously dwarfs my knowledge massively on this.
Well, hopefully. Yeah. I'll try and dwarf your knowledge best that I can.
Thank you. Now, before we get into things, let's give our audience a bit of an overview on yourself and all the wonderful things that you've done. Because you're Brighton-based, and really over the last, Brighton UK, that is, listener, of course, over 50% of audience are American. I always have to remember that. Brighton UK-based, yeah. And really over the last few years, you've been mopping up, producing for all the best heavy, sort of mathy and weird bands in the area. Among those are Delta Sleep, Tosca, the Physics House Band, Jamie Lenman, Black Peaks, Dorje, Quiet Lions. It's quite a list.
Polymath.
Yes, there is. I left us off in hope that you would do that.
There we go.
Of course, and Polymath. Yes, absolutely. you did a couple of things, a live thing and our last sort of ridiculous 14-minute single. But yeah, it's quite a substantial list of bands that you've produced locally, and of course you're producing stuff all over the place, and you have a really good up and coming YouTube channel where you're offering kind of hints and tips to people as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and how long have you been being a producer for?
Ooh, I don't know. It's hard to draw a line, because I kind of became a producer kind of by accident. I reckon I've been doing it seriously a bit over 10 years. Right. And when I say seriously, I mean almost making a living out of it. So yeah, but I started off tinkering and making demos and stuff, and that just kind of developed, and I caught the bug kind of thing. So it wasn't something I went and studied at uni or anything like that and decided this is what I want to be. It was just kind of something that almost seemed a bit unattainable. I was kind of thought of producers as a thing that I would never quite reach. And then, yeah, I guess it just becomes more what you do, I suppose.
There are two reasons, I think, that make becoming a producer obstructive. One is the amount of knowledge, the broadness of knowledge you need. Everything from, kind of a good bedside manner with bands to side chaining. There's such a massive amount of things that you have to be good at. And then, of course, from an equipment side, it's obviously obstructively expensive to become a producer if you're not going to be a resident producer in a studio, which, of course, you're not. You have your own studio built into your home.
I totally know what you mean, and that's probably part of why I found it one of those processes that just happened, rather than being I'm going to be a producer, because it does seem like, I always liken it to learning an instrument, and it's like one of those things you just have to do a lot and practice and learn. You're always learning. You don't kind of reach a goal, I don't think, right? And that's kind of why you keep doing it. But yeah, it's, I do have a setup at home and I have a studio, but it's not, I couldn't just do everything from there, at least in terms of what I do. I could produce music just from home, but I still regularly use studios to record drums and guitars and whatever. But it's really nice to have a mix set up at home, and I'm kind of expanding that a bit so I can do guitars and vocals and overdubs and stuff as well.
I guess that's it, isn't there? There's a big difference, you know, and I know obviously this podcast series, we'll have the direction will be towards what you, dear listener, can do to set up at home. But I guess, you know, from a professional standpoint with you, Mark, there's a big difference between having a space where you can track and having a space where you can mix. And yeah. I guess having a space where you can mix is something that you can and have set up to, you know, the nth degree. You can have a very professional version of that at a home studio. I guess the reliance on the larger spaces comes when for tracking.
Yeah, definitely. But even the tracking side, I mean, it is becoming more attainable. And I guess, like, what got me into it, because I always kind of saw it as, like, I guess, showing my age or whatever, like, this, the whole kind of revolution of all this much more affordable consumer gear. Well, there'd always been affordable consumer gear, but affordable consumer gear that actually produced decent results was, like, really starting to happen around the time I was at uni. Around that time, I wasn't doing music at uni, but I managed to spank most of my student loan on recording gear. And it was just because, you know, I'd seen a couple of mates do the same thing, and they were producing demos for their band that sounded really passable. And you used to have to spend a lot of money to go and get a really professional recording. So what we'd end up doing is going to kind of more project studio type studios, and it would sound okay, it would sound pretty good, but then it really started to dawn on me that all the kind of interfaces and things were getting so much better that you could produce results at least at that level from home on pretty affordable stuff.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what pushed me into doing it. And at that point I had no designs on doing it for a living. It was just like, oh, I can make really, like, listenable demos of my band's stuff, and that was enough for me. And you just get more and more into that stuff. But what I started saying there was kind of like, I think it's just becoming more and more easy. I think, you know, the hardest thing to do from a home setup would be to set up to do drums really well, I guess. But then,
of course, well, that's down to room size a lot of the time as well.
Yeah,
well, depending on what sort of sound you want your drums to be.
Yeah, mic collection and stuff. If we're talking about your more atypical rock drum sound, then definitely. But particularly in more the metal scene and stuff, people have less and less qualms about just programming drums.
Well, this is the thing.
And they sound better and better. And if you want to do your more lo-fi kind of, I don't know, you see some cool stuff where it's just people with hi-hat, snare and a kick drum in a small room, and they've just mic'd up in such a way where it sounds cool and it's got a vibe, you know?
Definitely. I think, you know, obviously home recording is something that lends itself very well to lo-fi. And, you know, and if you want to get a drum sound like that, then it's really easy to. And I was trying to think of the Tom Waits record where all of the drums were recorded by his son using stuff from their kitchen. I can't remember the name of the album. It had a red title, but it was Real Gone, which is, I should have remembered, it's my favorite album by Tom Waits for a long time. But I thoroughly recommend going to listen to that, listener, if you haven't, and you want to check out what, you know, someone as massive as Tom Waits was able to achieve with just kitchen appliances. It wasn't a child drumming. His son actually, I think, produced that record in 2004. But it was all pots and pans, and, you know, a lot of Tom Waits going as growling. The drum sounds. But there's so much you can do if you want to go lo-fi. And, you know, as something that I think I'll come onto a lot on this podcast, I'm a massive fan of plugins and drum. Drum plugins have got really, really good. There are I tell you what, they're one of the few things that I didn't kind of research in advance of this podcast. So maybe on one of the future episodes, this, and I'll give you some idea on some of the drum plugins that I think are very good. Is it Get Good Drums? Is that the is that the plugin company that I see advertised everywhere? And they were certainly doing. I mean, this is. I'll come onto this now. We'll start talking about this now. But you know, in light of what you were saying, Mark. Lockdown, this pandemic, you know, that we're going through, all of, you know, all of this terribleness that we're going through has meant that a lot of companies producing plugins or interfaces and things like that have put together packages, deals and discounts to make home recording even more of an achievability. Like you talk about when you were coming out of university, like interfaces getting good.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like now we're in this time where plugins are unbelievably good.
And I like one of the big changes with drum plugins and stuff is that you're kind of using real drums, you know. It's not it's not a synthesized sound anymore. It's just a very clever algorithm that allows you to almost play the real thing in the real rooms and all that kind of thing. And there's there's several bits of software that will do the trick. You can almost set your sights on any of the kind of big name, you know, Superior Drummer, Get Good Drums, all that kind of stuff. I mixed a whole EP recently that was all done on this kind of thing. I think they'd kind of played it in on a V-drum kit. And then, you know, maybe they edited it a little bit, you know, smoothed out some bits. But, and they were going for a realistic drum sound. And it's pretty damn good, really. I mean,
yeah, obviously, you know, a lot more work than playing in a real kit, but I don't know.
Yeah, but it kind of is and it isn't. I think if you want those kind of real intricacies and stuff, then it can be. Yeah, depends what kind of music you're doing. If you're doing some like something that's fairly one dimensional, like and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but some kind of like metal where it's just all. There's less dynamic and kind of ghost notes and stuff going on.
Oh, then. Of course. Well,
I think you can get pretty...
Metal drums have been there, replacing snares with, you know, samples for years. And that's great. Yeah. That's like, it's there's nothing wrong with that. And you know, obviously you didn't.
And it's a case of if it sounds good as well. It's like what you were saying about the lo-fi thing. And I think a lot of people worry too much about this stuff. And it's kind of like, if you embrace what you've got and just kind of let that be part of the inspiration rather than constantly trying to make something it's not, you know.
Absolutely.
Then you can get away with a lot more, and it's somehow a lot more honest. It's kind of like, rather than trying to make your string sound exactly like a real string section using something that's deliberately synthetic kind of sounding.
Lean into the synthesized nature of that. Yeah, I completely agree. I again, you know, because I just didn't think to research the drums, but I wish I could remember the company. But Adam Betts, the drummer from Three Trap Tigers,
did some
loops and samples for a drum company recently, and then they did, you know, some sort of lockdown, like 50% off.
Yeah.
So my band had been recording a little sort of lockdown record. And so we were able to get that. Adam Betts, one of my favourite drummers of all time. He's now drumming on, you know, the the new Polymath record. So amazing. I was pretty chuffed about that. You know?
Yeah, and there's so many people like him that have got their own little setups at home. Like so many, you know, if you look on Instagram or whatever, there's so many drummers that have just, they might only have a tiny, like, modest room, but they've just learnt where to put the mics or whatever, and they can get a wicked sound. And, yeah, I mean, you don't even go there with guitars. I mean, it's getting crazy now what you can do.
Yeah.
Don't even go there. What you can do with guitars now, there's almost no excuse to not get something recorded, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just become such an incredible option. And even like in kind of real world gear, the popularization of things like Helix, GT1000, you know, stuff like that has just made instant recording, you know, much more of an option. Even as, you know, we were talking about just before we recorded, Mark, we took the Boss Katana because, of course, with getting the Polymath guys to record, who had never used DAWs or anything before, didn't have interfaces, I realized, well, all of us own a Boss Katana. And you get a line out with a cab sim, well, that gives you access to all of the Katana effects. And, you know, the interface on the Katana 2s is pretty decent, and it gives you access to all the same effects that are built into the MS3. So that's every boss effect, more or less, that you can think of, and a digital replication of the ones that are analog. And you can layer those up, use them however you want, and run it from the line out with a very decent cab sim. Like, I'm not going to pretend by any means, you know, the Katana is the ultimate recording solution for guitar, but, you know, for an amplifier that costs £200, the fact that you have access to Boss's entire back catalog plus a perfectly good recording amp for that is like, that's the price of a normal interface, you know.
Yeah, it's madness. Like, the guitar stuff has kind of been teetering on the edge for so long, and now there's suddenly like 10 products, from plugins to kind of interfacey things to cab load boxes, amp load boxes, sorry, all these things that, and suddenly you can get these amazing sounds at home. And
yeah,
you know, that's case in point. It doesn't have to cost a fortune.
Well, kind of, you know, well, I guess whilst we've sort of whilst we're on the subject of plugins, which is kind of, you know, I feel like the rest of this podcast is going to be downhill from here for me, because I am so obsessed with plugins. Like, since discovering how good plugins can be, and listener, just the fact that you can get discounts on so many at the moment because of you know, lockdowns and everything that's happening, is just, this is the time, listener. Hence us doing this podcast. This is the time to get involved in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to actually very, very quickly on drums, get good drums. They're doing 33% off of everything at the moment.
Yeah.
When this podcast goes out, with, you know, no code necessary.
Yeah, and it's awesome stuff. I've used some of their stuff, just like trigger samples and stuff. The Get Good stuff, because it's done, what is it? Yeah. The Modern Massive stuff's all done at Middle Farm.
Is it? Oh, right.
Yeah. And so it's been helpful. I've even used it literally when I've recorded a kit at Middle Farm and I want to, like, you know, support the kick drum a bit, and I can find, I often make my own samples, but there was literally a case where it was like, well, we used the Q drums kick drum in that room, and then in Modern Massive, I could find that exact kick drum recorded in that room. But, like, just to have that stuff, you know, that's totally attainable. You can kind of grab those really amazing sounds and stick them on your demo, or, you know, help them on your actual productions or whatever it may be, you know?
Yeah. This special home recording series of Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Neural DSP. And now Guitar Nerds listeners get 30% off all Neural DSP plugins with voucher code Guitar Nerds. Neural DSP create unique, industry-leading guitar and bass plugins designed to make you sound exactly how you want without any sacrificing tone or dynamics. Their range includes signature plugin rigs available from some of the best modern guitarists in the world, like Corey Wong, Tosin Abasi, Adam Nolly Getgood, and Pliny. Plugins like Corey Wong's Archetype give you everything from crystal clear cleans and edge of breakup blues brashness, whilst the 14 series brings out all the crushing modern metal distortion you could possibly need. The point is that there's an amp here for every type of player, and with a 14-day free trial of any of the plugins at neuraldsp.com, with no credit card required, you can try before you buy and then purchase with the confidence that you're buying the right rig for you. And don't forget, enter code GUITARNERDS at the checkout for 30% off all Neural DSP plugins. Follow links in the description of this podcast or visit neuraldsp.com for more info. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's some incredible stuff. And talking about another plugins company, a company that are currently offering, as you know, as you'll hear, on this podcast, you can get 30% off with Guitar Nerds with Neural DSP at the moment, and all of their plugins. And, you know, their stuff is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, they're a brand that Rabea is quite on board with, which, you know, Mark, you've done, you know, lots of stuff with Rabea, you know, throughout the years. I don't know what he uses. Do you know?
Does he use
Yeah, does he use the Omega Suite, or is it the Archetype? I think it's the Archetype he uses.
I think he's, he uses a real mixture of stuff. Like, he's someone who kind of dips his toe in a lot of the kind of guitar plugins, and you know, he's got an Oxbox and a Boss. What's the Boss one called?
Tube Amp Expander.
Tube Amp Expander.
It's not a catchy name, is it?
Oxbox and the two note stuff, which is really cool because I'm kind of getting into that stuff a bit more now. And I went round the other week just for a full nerd out because I just wanted to try it all. And you know, yeah, well, I think it's just different tools for different things. I think the Neural stuff is particularly shines in like metal and things and.
Well, it certainly does.
Yeah. A lot of big records are using those. Like, what was it? It's one of those Nail the Mix tracks. Yeah, there's some big records are using that Neural stuff. Like, unashamedly, like, yep, all the guitars on this are like the Pliny thing, you know. And that's really cool that there's not this kind of, oh, you're cheating vibe anymore. It just doesn't matter. It sounds cool. Use it, you know.
The sound quality is so good, and this listener I think Neural DSP is very much like, you know, I approached these guys you know about this because this is the plugin brand that I think are making the best stuff and that I wanted to be associated with. The fact that they got involved with Omega Amp Works, which you know, Matt, the one of the main podcast hosts, has his own pink Omega version of the amp that you can that you have access to on Neural DSP. I just think that's fantastic. But for me, the thing, you know, you obviously mentioned Neural DSP big in metal, and for me that's always been the reason that I've been like, oh, that's cool, but you know, that's not my bag. I like mids. But they've recently hooked up with Corey Wong.
Exactly it's getting it's expanding.
Well, exactly. And the Corey Wong suite. So I got the Corey Wong archetype suite. And it's absolutely incredible. So, you know, like full price, it's like $140 for the Corey Wong suite. Corey Wong suite. But it comes with like three amp heads, plus there's bass stuff on there, which I didn't even know. So it's kind of, in purchasing this, I was like going through everything and I was like, oh, and here are some bass amps. Corey Wong doesn't play bass, but there are some bass amps here and they all sound fantastic. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is my new plugin for bass because it sounds amazing. Because all I want is like a super clean bass plugin so that I can do stuff with either like real world preamps or by, because you know, I'm obsessed with plugins, by buying other preamps.
What's the other one? The Dark Glass one. That's Neural DSP.
That's right. Yeah, Neural DSP.
That's incredible. I've used that on loads of stuff.
Have you? Right.
And even if it's like mixed with a real bass amp, but the amp also Plugin Alliance deserve a shout out because some of their stuff's amazing. The Ampeg.
Is that
Plugin Alliance plugin is incredible, and I was going to ask
about that because you used that on a live track that you mixed a Polymath, because I distinctly remember sort of the room sound and everything where we were recording. I was like, oh, this is awful, and I hated my bass sound the whole time we were doing that. And then we listened back to it after you'd mixed it, and it sounded great, but it also sounded. It sounded different. How I wanted it to be, but definitely not how it was when I was in the room. And I was like, wow, maybe I'm going deaf. Maybe I really was good. And then you were like, yeah, I was using this plugin and it was great. And I said, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, well, I've literally been, I think it was maybe with Delta Sleep, that became a huge part of the sound, that plugin. And right. I've been in the studio and just A-B'd it with like the legit real thing. And it's just like, yep, wicked. And I think like the moral of like the story we're talking about really is that it's at a stage now where neither is wrong or right. It's just whatever sounds good. It's not kind of like there's no longer any detrimental effect of using a plugin. There was a long time where, I don't know, things like people like Line 6 had some stuff and it was hit or miss. Like for some things it would be great, but then it couldn't do other things. It might be great for a metal tone, but if you tried to get like a broken, crunchy tone or a decent clean tone, it was difficult.
Yeah.
But now it's just kind of like whatever works. And I've mixed records and recorded records where it's like I've absolutely no problem using a Kemper one side and a rear lamp the other side, or a Kemper blended with a rear lamp, or what, it just doesn't matter. It's just like
good sounds. I've probably told this story on the podcast, on the main podcast, a couple of times, but I'll tell it here. When Polymath were doing something, I don't know, something in the studio, and we needed to just track guitars whilst, you know, bass and drums were being recorded. But because so much of our stuff is done on signals rather than planning, Tim, our guitarist, has to be in the same room as us when we're recording the other bits and bobs. So Tim's just, you know, tracking in the guitars, and in order to make things easy so that we could have the amount of bass amps and the drums being recorded at the same time, I borrowed a Kemper from GAC for Tim to run through. And Tim is the most sort of anti-technology guy ever. You know, he once sent a text message of his own forehead, you know, sort of not realizing. He doesn't understand technology at all. And so I left him with the Kemper. I was like, here you go. Here's how you scroll through some presets. All you need is a sort of a rough, drivey sound to lay your guitars down. So just find an amp sound that you like. And at the time, he was playing... he was playing Orange Rocker 30s, and he scrolled through, and he was like, yeah, I like the sound of this one. And I had a look to see what it was, and it was the Kemper Rocket Dirty, which is it wasn't that Tim had just got the orange amp tone. It was specifically the amp he uses in the real world. Without any, not, he had no idea. He wasn't looking at the names. He was just like, oh yeah, this sounds good. Just as kind of, because I'm always very aware that I'm like, oh, you mean this has these bells and whistles? Well, I think it's fantastic. Whereas, you know, Tim very much is just going on the actual sound of things and what he likes, you know. And just the fact that he found that just is absolute testament to what an incredible job Kemper are doing, I think.
Yeah. I've recently done a few sessions with, helping people make their own profiles and things with the Kemper, and it's it still just makes me giggle when we're doing it. It's just insane. Like, you've obviously, if you don't know, if you make these profiles, it's kind of a snapshot of your amp or whatever amp and cab that you're using. So you run a bunch of sine wave and white noise and stuff through it, and then it captures the very soul of your amp. And then you, you can refine it a little bit, but it's just crazy. And it will usually end up with me shutting my eyes and being like, right, and getting someone to A-B between the two. And it's just, it's scary how close it gets.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's really amazing. Yeah.
Well, for me, from a home, I guess, not even home recording, like just home practicing, home playing, we get guitarists get sent through more than anything else. We get loads of effects pedals sent through, and I've just for ease of setup, I have my interface and everything on my desk. And now that, like, certainly with the Archetype Corey Wong thing, now that I'm like completely happy with a guitar plugin, all pedals now just go straight into my interface. So even from a sort of playing at home, demoing stuff, I'm not using real world amps. I'm listening to stuff back through my monitors. That's
interesting, actually. I haven't done much of that, like putting pedals in front of plugins. Does it react how you'd expect and how you want it to?
I struggled for a long time to find the ones that did it properly. I went to all the effort of building a shelf where I could mount my Helix so that I could have that sort of permanently plumbed in. So yeah. I would kind of use that so everything could run through that. And because I really enjoy the versatility of the Helix. Obviously, having things like an effects loop built into the Helix meaning that if I'm using something like a reverb pedal, a real world reverb pedal that I want to plug into the Helix, I can still put it after the amp if I want that sort of thing. Like there's a big advantage to having something with an effects loop for sure. But the Corey one was the first thing where I was like, well, this is really good as kind of a clean platform. This is fantastic. And things like some of the effects pedals built in there, stuff like the shimmer is just absolutely incredible. So it kind of then comes down to, well, how good are your monitors? For sort of replicating that real world.
And the reactionary, I guess the only thing you might slip up on is that effect of driving an amp with just like a clean, you know, like a boost pedal or something. It may not have the same reaction.
Sure. Yeah.
But reverbs, delays, straight up distortion, fuzz, all that stuff, I presume works well. I know it works well in front of, that's another thing I was going to say with the Kemper, where we've done profiles and then put pedals in front of that. It reacts exactly how you'd want it to, how you think it would, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's it. I certainly think this one does. And like dynamics is a big part of my guitar playing style. Like that's really important to me. That sort of the ability to dig in, because I don't really use a plectrum for guitar. Like that ability to hold back and finger pick and then dig in when you really want some aggressive stuff. That becomes way more important. I like doing much more stuff with my right hand than with pedals and effects and having the
I think that's where some of these kind of plugins and what have you, you know, used to fall down and don't anymore. I think that's like where the change has happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I guess that's kind of a little bit of a rough. Here are some plugins that I think you should get, listener. Maybe a touch random. There are so many. I could do a plugin podcast because there's everything. You know, from one thing that I've been deliberating over recently is I was like, I think I want a Space Echo plugin. Because at the moment I use the Helix for Space Echo, and that's the only thing I have.
Right.
That has a Space Echo. So I was like, well, that's actually almost the only thing I'm using the Helix for anymore. I should just purchase a Space Echo plugin. Oh my goodness, everyone ever has made one.
Yeah, there's loads of them about.
How do you possibly decide? Have you ever used one, or do you use a real one?
I've got a real one, but I have used. I think the closest one I've heard is the Universal Audio one. That sounds like for like. That sounds incredible.
Really?
But right. I think everything from, Echo Boy, all those kind of plugins do it. You know, they do that thing.
Yeah.
But specifically of one that actually sounds like the Space Echo, I was really impressed with the Universal Audio one. And in my old studio, me and Jez Walton used to run this studio. We properly nerded out one day and kind of A-B'd and tried to see if each other could tell. And obviously it wasn't the most scientific test, because it kind of depends on what state your actual Space Echo's in at the time, how old the tape is, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it sounds amazing. It's really close. But like you say, loads of plugins out there now that do that thing. Also the Boss Space Echo pedal.
Oh, the RE20.
RE20, that's awesome. That's like really good.
That's fantastic. I gave that to the keys player in Polymath.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Dub Trio, you know that band?
Yeah.
Like they used to tour with the real Space Echo. And then for whatever reason that became, I don't know, it got damaged on a plane, something like that. I can't remember. But if you've ever seen that band, the drummer basically used to have a Space Echo next to him, and he'd have elements on the drum kit that he would just play through the Space Echo and kind of adjust it and almost play the Space Echo as he was playing.
That's so
do all
cool.
This mad dub stuff. And yeah, when I saw them live, he was using the Boss RE20 pedal. And it was
good.
Cool. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's very good. I mean, on that, on kind of plug-in effects and the Space Echo, a company that I think are really coming up on that, well, very much established, is Arturia. And they do their delay tape 201, but they also do a their memory brigade, which is their memory man. Mm-hmm. And just some of the stuff is fantastic. They do like, when it comes to reverbs, like they have their Rev Spring 636 and their Rev Plate 140.
Right.
And both of those are absolutely incredible. You can buy like the complete collection, I think, now, which is annoying to see because that was not the case. That was not the case when I purchased everything individually.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Arteria plugins, listener, are absolutely fantastic.
That's the stuff I really go for with the plug, is when you've got like the more vibey plugins. I keep using the word vibey, I'm sorry, but
do you mean like vintagey? No, you can use the word vibey as well.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, it just sort of cringe myself out a bit with it. But the vocabulary is not huge, but yeah, it's that kind of thing where things have a character to them. And I think, people like Soundtoys like nail that.
Right,
and,
right. That's the thing, I guess, isn't it? Like bringing plugins to life, sort of.
Yeah, and they're getting better at making them react in the same way as outboard gear does. So you can kind of slam the input and things. Like the Soundtoys plugins... they react in a certain way. Like if you smash the input up and then back the output up on almost any of their plugins, they react like a piece of hardware would.
Right.
Whereas plugins used to just start clipping digitally. They've actually built that into the algorithms. So all these kind of modeled, there's all this stuff modeled on kind of real gear and everything, but even the ones that aren't, it's just that reactionary thing that a lot of these plugins have now, which is really incredible. And it means you can get more out of them and you can use them in like imaginative and unusual ways.
I'm reading about their Decapitator right now.
That's awesome. Yeah. Decapitator, Devil Lock, both of those. It's just, you might as well just buy the plugin suite, whatever they call it. I think it's like, Soundtoys
5. Yeah, and, all 21 Soundtoys plugins.
Does the rack thing. And that, I don't think it's particularly expensive. It comes up on offer. I remember buying it on an offer because I had like two or three of them and the offer was such that I didn't mind that I already had some and had to buy the lot, if you know
what I
mean.
Right, I see. Yeah, it's $499 at the moment. That might well be a full price thing. I can't see that any deals have been done. Here's the great thing about plugins is that so many of them offer free trials. Which means that, you know, unlike everything in the real world, guys, now that we don't have guitar shops anymore, unlike, you know, the, in the real world, you can actually try before you buy.
Yeah, and it might just be that try before you buy thing is enough to last you the project you need it for.
Well, that's very
true.
And
you can just print it so you can still recall it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more plugin companies offering subscription now, which I think is a good thing as well.
I think subscription's a fantastic way to...
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just a good all-round way to do it, especially if you're not doing it for a living or doing it all the time. You can pick it up and put it down as you want to. You know that, all right, this month I just haven't got time to do any music. You just sort of sign off for a bit, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's quite nice. And Slate Digital and Plugin Alliance have kind of nailed that whole thing. And Plugin Alliance, you can do different, there's kind of different tiers. There's like a musician's one, there's a mix master bundle, or the mega bundle where you get all of them, you know. And I think it's a really good way of doing it. I've been sucked into a couple of those and you're kind doubtful, yeah. But it's
you
really
get
useful.
Six free premium plugins if you sign up to Plugin Alliance. That doesn't even cost you money.
Yeah, yeah. And their stuff's nuts. And if you kind of, I don't know, there's some of those plugins that, because I'm, yeah, the Universal Audio stuff's amazing as well, obviously. But some of those, there's a bit of cross-pollination with Plugin Alliance, like the things like the Shadow Hills compressor, the Marg EQ, and a couple of others. It's literally the same plugin. It's the same algorithm, you know.
Right, right, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the kind of class of plugin that they... I'm really into those plugins. I think they're great.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely... I kind of feel like This is almost, I should maybe rename this the plug-in podcast.
Yeah.
So whilst ultimately that is almost all I'm interested in the world at the moment, we should speak about kind of some other things.
Yeah. So would you want to think about what people can do in their home studios and things, as well as all the little toys and things, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's not just about the things you can buy. It's kind of, you know, this the aim of this is, you know, to encourage you, guitarist, if you're sitting at home with a little 10 watt practice amp, or even if you've got something decent, there is so much that you can do at home for way less money than you think. This episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Focusrite and their Scarlett series of recording interfaces. Now, this podcast is all about what you need to make great recordings at home, and I genuinely can't recommend the Focusrite Scarlett range enough. Due to the popularity of the series, Focusrite are now on their third generation of the interface range. And with six variants of size and starting at under £100, we think they're the perfect solution for getting into home recording. In fact, the Scarlett series have been the interfaces used to record almost all Guitar Nerds podcasts over the last 6 years. One of the features that really defines the Focusrite Scarlett as industry-leading is the intuitive Quick Start tool, which launches the moment you connect the interface, asks a few simple questions about the type of recording you're interested in, and then provides you with the walkthrough videos and links on how you can best get started along those lines. Focusrite's ultimate aim is to remove barriers to making music. They believe that technology shouldn't stand in the way of creativity, and the Scarlett series of interfaces are testament to that. Check them out at focusrite.com or follow links in the description of this podcast.
This is the thing we're going on about plugins. This is the guitar nerd equivalent of going on about pedals.
Yeah.
And you can have all the pedals in the world, but if you can't play the guitar well, then it sort of doesn't really help, you know.
We definitely jumped in at the deep end there and got excited. Yeah. I mean, I guess the kind of the first thing, listener, that you need, you know, to get started, well, the first two things are you need to choose a DAW, and you need to pick an interface. Now, when it comes to like your recording platform, your DAW, what do you use, Mark?
I use Pro Tools, for better or worse. Yeah.
What made you use Pro Tools? Because I guess the two everyone either uses Pro Tools or Logic when you go to a studio. It tends to be almost exclusively those.
Yeah.
Two.
I think I don't know. I was learning all this stuff at a similar time to one of my friends, Kieran, who was kind of. He was ahead of me. He was actually kind of, I can't remember if he was studying music tech at the time or if he was about to, but he was one of the people that inspired me to kind of get into it, you know, to get an interface and stuff. I was playing in a band with him and he was making our demos. I was just like, this is amazing. We were just recording at home in our garage kind of thing and blah, blah, blah. As I said, sounded cool, wanted to do all this thing, but he advocated Pro Tools. I think I started to learn Cubase,
right?
But he advocated Pro Tools, and it was around the time of the Mbox One, and I got an Mbox One, and that came with Pro Tools LE. So that's what I learnt on. I had to get over my. Because another reason that I didn't get into all this stuff earlier, I think, was I was a bit of a technophobe. Well, technology just didn't do that much stuff, I guess, that appealed to me. I thought of computers as word processing and Excel sheets and stuff. And then it was like, oh, right, cool. If I get a laptop, I can do stuff with the music. So then, yeah, it was like a massive learning curve. But I got into Pro Tools. And long story short, if we're talking to your listeners, it doesn't matter what you use. It's just do what you can afford or what appeals to you or what your friends use if you're collaborating with people. I mean, it's just a tape machine, really.
Well, of course, yeah. In its simplest term, I guess it is. I too sort of learnt on the Pro Tools, whatever the one was that you got in the basic box, like a real, was it LE?
Yeah,
or
that
SE
would be LE. LE. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I learnt on that as well. But I was quickly put off by the fact that I needed a dongle, and
yeah, there's so many downsides to it, and you know, It's still that way because they were the industry leaders. They kind of thought they had the monopoly over the whole thing. And I still have mixed feelings about using it. I think it's brilliant in a lot of ways, but especially for a home user, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily the one to go for.
Is there, there's no free version of Pro Tools, is there?
There is a basic free version of it, yeah. Okay. If you want to just learn the functionality of it. It's, if you're interested in working in studios, then you kind of still need to use Pro Tools or know how to use Pro Tools.
Do you? I didn't know that. Like, yeah, I assumed you could Logic or Pro Tools were the ones that were.
I think it's safe to say Pro Tools is still dominant overall. I think Logic is closing the gap a little bit, and there's some studios now that are kind of Logic studios in the main, but that's a recent development. If you go to any bigger studio, they're going to run Pro Tools as their main thing.
I see.
If you want to be if you're an aspiring engineer that wants to be an assistant and stuff, you need to know Pro Tools still.
Do you think it's very, is Pro Tools exclusively the one you know? Have you ever dipped your fingers into dipped your toes into any of the others?
I could dip my fingers all toes. It's fine. It doesn't matter what extremity we go for. I think I've used Logic a little bit, and I use it by default for recording audio for YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Partly out of necessity, to be honest. But yeah, I just think, I don't know, if you're going to do more programming and stuff, I think Logic has got better MIDI facilities. I think everything has got better MIDI facilities in Pro Tools. But where Pro Tools really shines is editing, mixing and tracking. It's really good for. But yeah, there's loads of, it's just about finding what suits you. Like Ableton is really, I think Ableton and Logic are better for a musician at home who wants to use them as more of a notepad, like, and create stuff. Like, they come with more creative tools.
I do think Ableton, just the way it aimed itself as being for live use with the Cycle.
Yeah.
Was it called Cycle 76? Is it 76? I can't remember. But I think for live application, Ableton did a really good job. Ableton's certainly what my girlfriend Emma uses predominantly. And she does a lot of synth stuff. And so being able to port like live drum bits and bobs onto, you know, one of those, I don't even know the name of them, the things that
it's
have
like
lots
the push.
Lots of buttons. Yeah, the push.
Yeah, it's awesome, all that stuff. I want to get more into that. I need to somehow create some time to get more into that kind of stuff. One of my friends is really heavily into that, and I've gone round and we've mucked around a few times, and it is just, yeah, really amazing creative tools for people, and not especially, but also inclusive to people that maybe aren't musically trained and stuff. I think you can just kind of, they're intuitive interfaces, and yeah, you can have fun with them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also think I do think Cubase is very good. I really.
Yeah, man. Yeah, totally. I get sniffed at, but I honestly don't know why. I think they've had it down for years. You know.
Well, then the interfaces they brought out like 2 years ago were like a Neve preamp interface for like £100, and it was, you know, they were fantastic. They were incredible interfaces. I was very impressed with those. I don't know how to use Cubase, even though I do have a copy of it taking up quite a lot of space on my computer. I really should either sort of, you know, poop or get off the pot, I guess. But
I know a couple of people that use it and swear by it. I think, you know, it's the same as what we were saying about, oh, you know, a plugin's better for guitar or rear amps or this plugin or that plugin. It's just like, it's all good now. Just find what you like. Try some stuff out, you know?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, this very podcast, dear listener, gets edited on Adobe Audition, which prides itself on being a podcast editing suite, but also offers fantastic facilities for editing music. And I've created music on Adobe Audition before. I actually think it's very good, very intuitive, you know, really straightforward. Obviously, most of the plugins I'm using are from Isotope. Certainly both, you know, myself and Mark's audio are edited using the Isotope Nectar suite and then mastered with their with another suite that I use every single week and can't remember the name of
it. Like Ozone or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, Ozone, that would be it. But, you know, the Isotope stuff I think is fantastic. But Audition just offers a really great blank canvas, I think, especially for podcast editing, and has a really good MP3 converter, which you wouldn't have thought is something that actually is... there is a quality difference on, but there really is. As someone who's edited audio, you know, podcast audio on different platforms before, the Adobe Audition one is
yeah, it does.
Good.
All that stuff makes a bit of a difference, definitely. Yeah. If you're, changing formats and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one that I've started using now is Presonus
Studio One.
Yeah, man.
Again, which heard good things.
But it's everything. Everyone offers like a free version of something, and you know, I guess the precursor to this is I needed to teach the rest of my band how to use a DAW. So I was like, okay, well, I knew that not all of them were Mac users. So I was like, well, Logic, I can't teach them Logic, so I'll need to learn something else and use that. So you know, I found Studio One. And I had a friend that used it, and I realized that they've done such a great job at tiering the versions that it was really easy for us to use it as a collaboration between band members. And listener, you know, I recommend this if you have a band and you want to teach everyone the basics and maybe put something together, because the free version is fantastic. You just can't use plugins. And you can upgrade to sort of the professional version for whatever it is, I don't know, 150 quid or something like that, and then be able to use all of those things. They also give you a load of pretty good plugins and actually really good compressor that I still use, even with all the other bits and bobs I use. But also you can do a part upgrade and just get the ability to use plugins for like 50 quid, which is very, very good. And I really like the MIDI programming element of Studio One. That really appealed to me, especially as I thought, you know, we were going to be building drum tracks, probably building synth tracks and things like that. Very straightforward, very easy to use. You know, the interface itself comes with loads of great demos and links to videos where you can learn how to use it, as does everything. But you know, as a essentially a completely free option, I thought it was completely fantastic.
And Reaper's worth a shout as well, because
I don't know anything about Reaper. I know someone who uses it, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah,
that's free as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's basically, I think it's pretty much free, and I think you can like donate. I think it's like a sort of open platform or whatever you call it thing. Right. But yeah, I've not stepped into that either myself, but I've recorded like live sessions where people have been using it, and you know, it's supposed to, like, one of the things people always say about Reaper is how stable it is, but I've watched a couple of videos and stuff, and when I've thought about trying out other DAWs, and it's kind of one that you can also change a lot, like customize, you know.
Right.
So if you're used to, say, Pro Tools or something, you can just kind of pretty much tell it to react like Pro Tools does.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And there's just way more open, you know, open source. Is that the right?
I guess
it's not open source. No, I'm talking rubbish. But yeah, it's very customizable and it's very affordable, if not free. So that's another good one to check out. And I think you can use most kind of plugins and bits and pieces with it.
Yeah, that's very good, very versatile. But yes, I guess the moral of this one, listener, is it's kind of up to you. Everyone really does offer a free version. Obviously, Pro Tools has the advantage of moving forward into sort of studio stuff. But certainly, if you're just trying to, you know, get on board with demoing, there is no wrong answer. And as you said, Mark, it's like it's a tape machine.
Yeah, for a lot of people it is. It depends what kind of music and stuff you're doing as well, doesn't it? Because it's like, if you want to write a lot of stuff with synths and bits and bobs, like some DAWs will offer more in terms of software instruments, like with the included bundle, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
and some are more geared, like Pro Tools is kind of geared towards the studio and recording, because it was one of the early ones where it was trying to take over from the tape machine. And then Logic and people like that is much more geared to music creation.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And that's it. I think most of the new ones, the ones that aren't kind of, you know, the studio standards, the way they're sort of dealing with the fact that they're not studio standard is they're making sure that you, and this is great if you're just setting up a little home studio, guys, they're making sure that you have as much as you possibly can available to you in the way of like free instruments that come with the package, and kind of versatility when it comes to that sort of thing, recording virtual instruments.
Yeah, exactly. You're just good to go. with a load of that stuff, you can hanker after all these other kind of brands of plugins and things. But if you buy Logic or Ableton or Studio One or whatever it might be, if you want to create some music, you've got everything you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we're actually coming up to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds Home Recording Guide, and there's so much stuff that I haven't covered with you, Mark. I think it would be fantastic if I could get you on another episode of this series.
Yeah, man. If I haven't bored everyone's tears, I'm happy to come back and give it another go and see if I can really ruin someone's evening. You know?
Well, we ended up going down the rabbit hole of of equipment, which of course is unfortunately the rabbit hole I will always end up going down. But there are kind of so many things I want to ask you about and talk to you about kind of more than gear, about actual production and hints and tips and things that people can do, because that's something that you've had a real focus on your YouTube channel as well, with a really interesting like series of videos on helping people with how to, you know, do everything from, I don't know, record lead vocals to sort of setting up their studio room, you know. So there are all those things that would be great to talk to you about on there. So
I'd love to come back. That'd be cool. And we can not just like list loads of plugins and stuff. We could actually talk about how we could use some of them and things. But
exactly.
We can list some plugins as well. Definitely.
I'd love that. So thank you very much, listener, for tuning into this week's List of Plugins podcast. Don't forget, of course, you can follow Mark on YouTube at Mark Roberts Producer Engineer, or visit his website, markrobertsproducerengineer.com. You can follow Guitar Nerds on all of the major social platforms, and join us on our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum, and our Patreon at patreon.com/Guitar Nerds. And we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers.